Mickey Hart here, you're listening to the GAA Hour Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Alright, you're very welcome along to the GAA Hour Football Show brought to you by our friends in AIB. Today I've got Barry, Cal and I've got Conan in studio with me. And lads, thank God, finally we've reached a point where we've got four Division 1 teams playing each other. Which is where we want to be and we've had to wait until now to get that. But look, how exciting is this?
Yeah, it's great. Definitely the big weekend of the season. It's been a long build-up to it, I suppose.
Long build-up.
But just trying to think back, you know, I mean, you've obviously four Division 1 teams playing against each other. They'd all be ranked in maybe top 5, top 6 in the country. Double header, four of probably the best supported counties in Ireland as well. So it makes for a really attractive double header. And yeah, certainly be looking forward to it, all right.
It's interesting that, you know, coming on this weekend of the four Division 1 teams playing each other and the excitement around it, that Pádraig Duffy has released a championship proposal just after breaking in the last maybe 20 minutes. So we're not fully on top of it, but we have an idea. So basically what his proposal is that the four provincial winners, that everything stays the same, which immediately isn't, we're not getting off to a great start. So everything up until the All-Ireland quarterfinal stays the same. Okay, I'm going to say that again. Okay, let's just get this out of my mind and try and be positive about this. Basically, the four provincial winners, instead of playing the four teams that come through the qualifier groups, those eight teams will go into two groups of four.
Yep.
And they will play each other on a round robin, a round robin basis.
So they'll all get three matches.
So they'll all get three matches. So I mean, if you're to look at it this year, you're going to have in one side you'll have Dublin, Donegal, Tyrone, and Mayo, and on the other side you'll have Kerry, Galway, Tipperary, and Clare. Now Tipperary and Clare teams like that won't get through every year. So basically, you're going to have eight of the best teams in the country, and instead of them just playing in one weekend in All-Ireland quarterfinals, we're going to get more games out of them. So you're going to have the best teams playing each other. So from that point of view, we got off to a bad start. You know, anything that's going to, you know, encourage or, you know, have the best teams playing each other more often
is a good thing.
Is a good thing.
Yeah, and you're not going to I don't think the GAA will ever change it dramatically in one swoop. So this might be a stepping stone into something else further down the line. But I think the fact that it's coming from the GAA obviously has a much more likelihood that it will be passed.
Yay.
You know, yeah, I think so, yeah. Because, I mean, they'll be able to have discussions with Centre Council and different people in the lead up to Congress that maybe other people wouldn't have that advantage in doing it, you know, so they can suss out the appetite. And if there's a few issues that might be highlighted amongst them or by the press or someone, they can actually try and tease them out prior to going to that Congress date and the vote, and hopefully try and iron out as many issues before that as possible.
The other thing is that we've always been crying about groups and like having tables and stuff for the championship or a league format. Like this is, I suppose, one step towards that, and then the GAA gets used to
the mini
groups,
league,
then,
isn't it?
Like, it's a little mini league of the best teams, you know. So that's going to be massively exciting. Another thing, though, like, I mean, you've got four games in quarterfinals. This is going to throw up 12 games, so you're going to have to free up minimum 3 weekends, because then you want recovery after it. So you nearly want to free up a month of the schedule for this. So I mean, where are you going to fit a month into the current system?
The only thing is, the two semi-finals I think are going to be the one weekend, so that saves a week straight away.
Yeah.
And then if you think that after this weekend, isn't there a gap to the first semi-final of maybe 2 weeks or 3 weeks, so you might be shaving a week off it then as well, you know.
Yeah,
so you might be only trying to get 2 weeks more
right
at play.
It is actually unfair that one semi-final has 3 weeks and another has two, and I don't know whether it's unfair for the 3 weeks team or the 2 weeks team, because 2 weeks is a night. Most players say they want a game every 2 weeks.
Same for the All-Ireland final. So some teams it's a 4 week gap and some
four
for a three, you know.
I think the 4 weeks is actually a disadvantage there in that one.
Yeah, I mean, it still doesn't address the real inequality, which is like Kerry will still play two games to get here,
yes,
and Dublin could play four or Tyrone could play four. And I know then it's good for Kerry in a sense that they'll still get tested before a semi-final, which is probably the best thing out of it. You do have to still come through on merit then through this group stage, but they're still going to get there playing two matches compared to a team who will play 100% more games than them, who've played four.
Yeah, that's true, but Kerry would have to play seven games now to win an All-Ireland minimum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone else might have to play eight or nine, so it's not as a big
It's not as big. Yeah, the only thing that, you know, it's written in the article here, or in the
proposal,
the new structure would retain the provincial championships in their present form and confirm their importance in the context of the All-Ireland Championship. Now, immediately that pisses me off, because the provincial championships are what throw up the anomalies. There's not equal amount of teams in each one. Some are stronger than others. Some are a cakewalk for likes of Kerry. Ulster's really difficult. Teams don't start at the same time. There's like 6 week gap between when Mayo might go out in the Connacht Championship and when Donegal might go out in the... Like, it's not a level playing field. And that shows a huge appetite within GAA of not ever doing anything with the provincial championships. And that's hugely disappointing for me. And I'm not one to try and say, let's do away with the provincials, because there's too much support for them. And the whole structure of the GAA is built around the provincial councils. And it's just impossible to get rid of them. But take them out of it. Play them as an important standalone competition. They're cups. Who's not interested in a knockout cup?
Yeah.
And say the four winners, for example, are given some sort of leg up in some good seeding. So you're encouraging teams to, it's a huge advantage for us to win this, to get
you need to give an incentive.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
But there has to be an appetite to say that the provincials, while leave them as a brilliant competition alone, they cannot feed into the All-Ireland, because that's what's throwing up the unfair, schedules, the unfair, like how a team... Both teams playing in the same competition are tailoring their training. They're doing different training. One's not taking the league seriously because they have a tough first game. The other one's, kind of relaxing the whole way through it. That's the problem. And that line in the proposal would really kind of annoy me, specifying their importance to the All-Ireland series. No.
I completely agree. And it took me a while to get there, because as an Ulster man, we get so precious about our provincial series and stuff. But it can't affect the All-Ireland series anymore. I don't think it can. It's like, you can't have five teams or six teams in Munster and 12 teams in Leinster and they're still going to the same stage.
Same destination. Yeah, yeah.
It's not logical. So actually, one of my proposals was to have the two finalists in each province be the teams seeded. I would have eight groups of four. So the two finalists would be a seed in each group.
So there's the incentive.
So it's still valuable in a sense.
Ulster is a difficult one for me, because they do have huge power within the GAA, and I think the GAA putting in that line are just acknowledging that, look, we won't be able to get rid of the provincial championships. But I do agree. I do agree that there should be a separation there. But even with Ulster as well, like they continue to only play one championship match on a given weekend, which is scandalous. Like, there's nine teams in the province, and they end up playing their championship over 9 or 10 weeks. Like, it's crazy,
Connacht's worse.
Yeah.
Connacht dragged 2.5 months out of six teams.
And even in Connacht this year, Roscommon actually played three championship matches prior to the final, and Galway only got to play one.
Yeah.
You know?
There has to be an appetite to say, this needs to be separated out of whatever proposal you want to come with. And I think Pádraig Duffy's is good there. Imagine that two groups, and especially, for example, if Monaghan hadn't been beaten, they might have been in instead of Clare, and you have two solid groups. Group one
is phenomenal. Like, group one, you'd watch every game.
Every game would be massive. Game, yeah. So like, that would create, and 100% create excitement. The All-Ireland semi-finals on the same weekend.
And players would want it as well.
Players would be delighted with that. 100%. It doesn't help. It doesn't help weaker counties having a chance of winning anything. That's completely brushed. You've basically got, you'll have those eight teams in those two round robins. And basically at the start of the year, they're the only teams that has a chance of winning anything. Because, you've still got the weaker counties training five times a week without any chance of lifting a cup at the end of the year outside of the league, which doesn't have enough prestige and is played at the wrong time. Players want a chance to win something. You know what I mean? Like,
the Division 4 teams are not affected by this at all. They're not like
our Division 3, let's be honest.
Well, Tipper Division 3.
Well, I know. Right? Yeah, but give me one, I'll give you 15, right?
I remember a couple of years ago, I actually proposed an intermediate championship, and I've come full circle from it, but it was because at the time I spoke to a few players of these, I hate the term, but so-called weaker counties, And like Ryan McCluskey was one from Fermanagh, and now look at them, like, you know, they're always competing up around the top 12.
Yeah.
And he was like, no way, I don't want to play in some Intertoto Cup, was his words. Brian yeah. Darby from Offaly.
Yeah.
He said, like, you know, they're putting on the same training as you said there, Willie. But so they want to play against Dublin, they want to test themselves
but
against
the
best.
How often does that happen, though? Like, I mean, I always hear that saying, and you'll use the Fermanagh example. But Fermanagh are one team out of Division 3 and 4. There's another 15 that will never, in that year, haven't done that. So you can't use one example of Fermanagh completely playing above themselves in a year and getting to a quarterfinal
yeah.
saying, that's not the norm. That's a complete one-off that this has happened. Well, so would they not be better off? You ever see Division 4, Division 3, Division 2 of the league, how they celebrate winning the league? They're delighted to win it because no matter your competitive nature, even though it's not given enough prestige, they're in Croke Park and they're lifting a cup in Croke Park.
It's a final.
Imagine calling a Division 2 All-Ireland. Like, there'd be celebrations. You're All-Ireland champions at your own level. And that's given completely opening up all that second tier of the country into winning an All-Ireland. And I mean, that motivation during the year, we have a chance to win an All-Ireland. It's a completely different ballgame for those teams.
But I did speak to a couple of players from Division 4 teams last year about it, and they didn't have any appetite for a secondary competition
at all.
Yeah,
but that's because... Barry, and this is... I'm not, sorry to cut you off, but that's because Division 4 have been separated away like losers and have been called the B.
Yeah, yeah.
Whoever wanted to be on a B team when they're in school? There's a stigma to B.
Yeah, stigma.
Huge stigma.
Because their argument was, okay, we just go through the league and we either get promoted or we don't. Then you have the provincial championship, probably lose first round or second round. Then you have the qualifier, lose first round. There'll be no appetite at all to go back training the following Tuesday. You either want to go on a holiday, you want to go to America, or you want to go back to your club maybe and focus on playing club football.
I would agree.
You know,
there's no
you're not going to want to pack your gear bag 48 hours later.
Yeah, for the losers. For what is a losers group?
Yeah. And you can throw in a holiday as a prize or something like that, but it's still not the same.
No,
you know,
it's not the same. That's why this should be coupled in with Division 3, where there's a few, you know, the Tipperary's are, you know, and the Kildare's were this year. Mm. And they're not looking at themselves as losers then. Mm. And they're actually battling against these teams for a Division 2 All-Ireland Championship, you know, which... Like, I've been in those lower tiers. Like, I mean, that's a huge carrot instead of saying, let's be honest, we can have whatever meetings we want and be optimistic. We're not winning anything this year. Like, we'll stay training. But isn't that a horrible way to look at your year?
We're
not actually going to win anything here this year.
What was wrong with B teams in school? What's
I was in sixth year, I was on a B team, and it was one of the worst years of my life. And they said, do you know what they said? They said, oh, it's done on the classes. Right, so you're in that class and this is the A, but the good lads in our class were actually on the A. So I'm not buying that excuse. It was just me and one other fella that actually we thought should have been on it, but we weren't. Look,
you're probably a star player though.
I don't
got your confidence up.
Midfield, I was actually taking the freeze and everything.
To pick one hole in those group stages in the quarterfinals, as they're going to be called now, there could be a couple of dead rubber matches like Galway and Clare could be out by the last game.
Mm.
So they're just playing a match for no reason in the quarterfinals, no chance of getting to the semi-final.
Yeah.
I mean, will that affect it?
Obviously, that's looking at it very critically. You know, like, I think there's no structure that's ever going to be put out there that is not going to find fault with, because everyone finds fault with something that's not theirs.
And I think there's a highly likelihood that this will be passed, because I don't think Pádraig Duffy will put in the work. You know, he's running
his
GA.
A few of his things didn't get through last year's Congress, like the shortening the season by two
weeks.
That didn't even get through, and that seemed like a no-brainer.
Congress, like, is a strange experience. I've been at the last couple of myself, and, you know, an issue.
What's the age profile of that?
Yeah, like, I'd say average age is 65. And
like
that's actually a bit of an issue for me, because you have these guys, you know, try not to be ageist, who are maybe 60s or 70s, and they're making decisions that affect 20, 21-year-olds. It's nearly like, you know, Brexit, where you had the older generation voting to leave, and it mightn't affect them because it's the younger people
in their
20s and 30s that'll affect
it,
you know?
And one other point we'll make before I'll make before moving on from this is that all these delegates are involved in county boards who need funding from their provincial councils.
Yeah.
And are they going to vote against something that the provincial council doesn't want? And how are they going to be financed if they're provincial? You know,
the whole process of it. Because let's say a county board chairman or secretary, whoever, has to go to the county with a proposal. He might have a certain view on it, and he will slant the argument to, you know, pros or cons against it to suit maybe himself or suit the county. And then he's going up to Congress that day and placing the vote. Like, who's to know what he's voting?
It's a secret, isn't it? That's crazy. Like, you could actually spend a full hour talking about the ins and outs of Congress, but we're not going to bore all of you with that. Because one of the big talking points from the weekend, lads, is where Donegal are going to play Michael Murphy. And I'm delighted to say he joins us on the line now. Michael, first up, can I clear something up? Are you injured or carrying an injury or what's going on?
No, I'm not. I'm not at all, Colin.
Have you heard that rumour?
I've heard it from a few people, all right. People saying he's not moving well and not going well, so must be down to an injury. But now I'm granted a wee bit of an ankle injury prior to the first round of Ulster. Cleared up, thanks to the God. I've been in full training and feeling grand, so just looking forward now to getting out on the weekend. And
yeah, it's funny.
I'm trying to dispel them up.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned the ankle injury. I heard you were getting a little birdie up in Donegal, told me you're getting injections into your ankle. But
right. No, definitely not true. Tender stories up here tend to go a bit of leg sometimes, so there's nothing on the ankle injury there, but no injections now.
Yeah, I've read that you said you responded a lot better against Cork than you have in other years. Why do you think you responded so well after losing Ulster?
Well, I think, I suppose there's no secret, I suppose, the fact that any time we're supposed to beat in a provincial final, maybe in years gone by, in the two prior defeats they had in Ulster, we didn't we just didn't respond well. Things were fairly dead and fairly flat, and so it is very difficult, I suppose, to turn the tide around, because you want to go through the front door and get beaten in the provincial final. I suppose maybe especially Ulster can be a bit of a kick in the teeth, but this year, I suppose, having come through that, a lot of us really kind of sat down fairly early after the final. I don't think we were that far away on that given day either, which was another, I suppose, reason for a bit of optimism. But we knew as a group we needed to respond a lot better, and we needed to, I suppose, really just stop sulking about and get on with it, and I suppose embrace the whole thing of that extra game against Cork, I think we responded fairly well and did that now. But I suppose the real tail of the line now, I suppose, this weekend against Dublin, which will be a bigger game, and I suppose the true meaning of how we responded, I suppose, will be seen this weekend,
Yeah, it's a weird one, really, with the Ulster final, in that you were the better team for a lot of the game, and Tyrone got a run on you when it was, the most important part of the game, and suddenly you're no-hopers and they're all Ireland contenders. The line is so thin.
It's exactly it. I suppose it's football, and Tyrone, really, at that stage where it needed to be won in the game, they put their hands up and the men stood up and they delivered, And that's what it'll come down to. But I think you need to, when you're in it and you're playing week to week and you're playing month to month, whether it be in a National League or Championship, you just have to look at games and on their ways. Some defeats can bring about, huge changes where you need to really, really have a look at yourself really, really deep down, and maybe other games, bring about things where there were positives in it and you have to look upon them positives. But also, I suppose, the Tyrone game did show up, I suppose, the fact that we only scored a couple of points really in the second half, and that's an area, I suppose, that was the one big area that we needed to really address going into the Cork game, and now really going into the latter stages of the kind of All-Ireland series,
Yeah, do you enjoy playing in a game like the game against Tyrone?
I mean, I do, I suppose there's a lot made of it, that people look upon it as a game of chess, and it's very, I suppose it would measure by a mild word to put it, but there's something about it, trying to break down and trying to, I suppose, develop and create the opportunities to get shots away and to get scores, I suppose, at the end of the day. That's the game you're presented with. It's the game you're presented with quite a bit now in modern football, And is it enjoyable? Yes, it's a challenge, Whether it's people say it's enjoyable or not, it's another thing. It's a definite challenge, and that's what you're up against. So, we have to get over it, whether it's enjoyable or not. But the challenge is put in front of you. And at the end of the day, a lot of us are players run it to try and win into further counties, you have to get over the whole thing about whether it's enjoyable or not. I still think the whole experience of being part of an inter-county setup and playing with lads and training with lads and going away to represent your county is the most enjoyable thing to do it. The football is obviously tough. It's difficult. Players are so well conditioned and players in other counties now, you analyse so much. It's always difficult. It's never a day where everything's going to go perfect. But no, I think it's the most enjoyable experience now playing as a footballer,
Yeah, well, the reason I ask you do you enjoy it is because I was watching you in the first half and you were in at full forward. And you had Colm Cavanagh blocking off one side of you, and you had Justin McMahon blocking off the other side. It's like, geez, where are you supposed to even run in that scenario?
To me, it's difficult to say. Tyrone, their homework done, they're very well set up, and we knew that going into it. They're obviously They're a very, very well drilled and managed side, you know, and they're very smart footballers. But like, I mean, that's what you would expect of teams, you know, at that level. You expect things, you know, obviously you're not going to leave huge amounts of space in areas of the field where you may see danger occurring, you know.
Yeah.
And I would hope for Shells to be doing the exact same thing. Like, so
is it a waste of time playing you in there when against the likes of Tyrone?
Here, I do think there's ways and means about around it, you know, and we do strive, whether it's myself or Patrick or whether it's, you know, Oran or Leo or Colin that come in, you know, to play in that inside line. You know, we try and find ways. I do feel that there is possibilities and there's ways around it, and you look at the teams that can do it quite well, and we're playing one on Saturday, Dublin, who can find these ways and means of doing it. So yes, it's up to ourselves inside to make sure that the movement is good and out the field to have the head up to know that there is possibilities there, you know, to look up for it. But likewise, you know, there's other ways and means around that you would like to maybe create out the field to do it. But nah, come here. There's days you enjoy, there's days it goes well for you, and there's days then it just doesn't go well for you. But you have to know that you're in there doing a job for the team, and that's the more important thing, you know.
Yeah. How would you define your position on the team?
Very, very simply, you know, we cut it back, whether it's myself or whether it's anybody else in the team, you know, and it might sound a horribly boring answer, like, but I mean, number one, we're there to do to work as hard as possible for the team, you know, whether that's with or without the ball, and that's something we can control going out. You know, obviously, you're playing sometimes out around the middle of the field or half forward line, and your job, I suppose, role is to try and bring energy to that position and to try and get on the ball and try and create and try and work hard and south the ball. And then, I suppose, when you are inside or where you're given the nod to go inside, you know, there's no different than any other team. You have to be as dangerous as possible. You have to be patient. And when you're on the ball, you have to be as dangerous as possible to get scores and to create, you know. So, you know, it's either, I suppose, it's out the field trying to create and work hard, or it's inside, I suppose, trying to be dangerous. I don't think there's any great secret for anybody that's playing in them positions around the country, you know. So, whether I get the nod in one position or the other, I'll take it and just get on with it and say enjoy it, you know.
Yeah, you are getting a lot more time in at full forward under Rory than you did, for example, under Jim. You were out around the midfield much more. Like, I mean, you're starting games for maybe 20 minutes, 25 minutes against Monaghan, against Cork in at full forward now. Is that something you enjoy, or is that a very obvious new role for you?
It's up to getting older now. It's not on the legs anymore.
You have a lot of mileage on those legs.
I suppose so, everybody says it. I'm only 26 now.
There's still a lot of mileage on them, though.
That's not come here. No, that's it. Probably has been maybe this year. A wee bit more time seeing inside. And, you know, I think looking back and upon other years when we came up a wee bit short, you know, our defence has always been fairly okay, you know, just getting scores on the scoreboard and keeping the scores ticking over, you know. And I think as a whole group, we want to try and develop that in terms of trying to get more scores on the board, and whether that means that I can help out in that regard on the inside line, then so be it, you know. So I think we have made a conscious effort as a group, you know, to try and look at that and address that and attack a wee bit more efficiently, you know.
Yeah, and do you feel under pressure to get more scores, Michael? Because looking at your stat, you've 1 point from play in the championship this year, and that was against Cork at the weekend. And to be fair, you nearly wanted to do anything but shoot in that one. It was like it was your last option, and it ended up being a sensational score. Like, you know, are you thinking about scores, or do you see yourself more as a creator now?
You have to see yourself as a scorer, you know, and obviously if people look at that, and I look at it myself, I'm like any player, any forward, you know, I want to go out and everybody wants to score, you know, 20 points in a game, and everybody wants to catch 20 kickouts, and everybody wants to make 20 turnovers. But, you know, obviously on any perfect day, I want to go out and score as much as possible for the team. I haven't done that probably this year as much as I would have liked to have done, but I just keep chipping away. You have to keep chipping away. There's no point getting too up or down about it. This again presents an opportunity to try and do it again, and that's what I'll be doing, you know.
Yeah.
You know, just have to try and be dangerous for the team and keep going as best I can, you know, because listen, there's no ways and means around it. You just have to keep chipping and keep working, you know.
Paul Galvin was on the show, Michael, on Monday, and he had a theory about playing in the full forward line and moving out around the field. And he said for him, when he played in the full forward line when he was younger, going out the field kind of dulled his attacking instincts. You know, I didn't even remember Paul Galvin as in the full forward line. But he made a point that when you're out around the midfield so much that, you know, that real striker, that real turn and shoot instinct, it might get a little bit dull. What do you think of that?
Come here, it could be, definitely. Man, it's not something that I would have thought of myself, you know. You know, automatically when I cross into the inside the 21, if I'm playing inside, automatically I know the first thing I'm thinking is how it can be dangerous and how I can score and how I can get into opportunities to score. When you're outside it, then you know you have to think about it a wee bit slightly different. But I can say when I'm in there, the mentality is to do that. Obviously, sometimes the way teams are set up and maybe with the way we play ourselves on that any given day, it mightn't always, you mightn't be afforded that opportunity a lot, but when you do, you have to stay patient, and when you do get that opportunity, it might only be the twice or three times in the game, you have to be ready for it and take it, you know.
Yeah.
So as I say, when I'm inside, I mean, like any other player, if you chat to any other inside player around the country, I'm sure they'll tell you the same thing, that you have to be dangerous and you have to be patient to take your chances when they do come, you know.
Right. One of the critics after the Ulster final was your former manager, Jim McGuinness. You know, he was critical enough in the Irish Times of Rory, not so much critical of the players. How has that been accepted or received within the group?
Here, as I say, there's a lot of, I suppose now with the GAA, there's a lot of writing, and there's a lot of things spoken. You know, people will look upon it, maybe looking at things, I didn't read the article myself, but people look upon it maybe as criticism. You know, and I know Jim, that he's mad for everybody to do well in the county,
except Rory maybe.
that's the case from knowing both, you know. But people probably put two and two together and come up with five. So as I say, I don't think there's any great delving needs to be done on it. Both men are mad for Donegal to do well, and you know, I don't think the group hasn't looked at it, or nobody has looked at it. You know, it's just everybody, I suppose, outside of it has put things together and trying to come up with a big story, you know.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Just finally, Michael, I don't even want to ask you where you're playing this weekend, because I know you're going to be at full forward because the Dublin full back line is so small. So don't start lying to me here.
the question on there, is it?
It's a very, very loaded question. But no, seriously, genuinely, the Dublin full back line, you know, Rory O'Carroll is gone. So, like, for me, looking on, you know, objectively and trying to analyse it, you would think that there's an opportunity, number one, for you to get more ball in there, and for number two, for you to have a size advantage over anybody in there.
Come here, it's difficult. You know, we look upon it, I suppose, whether it's Patrick or whoever we can play inside there, we always look at it every day as an opportunity to try and get ball into your line as closest to goal. If I am in there, I'll try to be as dangerous as possible, move as possible and give options. You know, but you know, looking into it, if people see it as a perceived weakness of Dublin, I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. Obviously they've lost players, but you know yourself and everybody that's analysing the game, you know, the players that are coming in for Dublin are, you know, every bit as talented as players, and from looking at them throughout the National League and the early stages of Leinster, you know, their players are damn experienced that have come in there in the full back line. Philly McMahon, yeah, and Johnny Cooper, David Byrne, you know, the likes of them are massively experienced and all Ireland winners. So thinking that it's a weak line, I wouldn't agree with. I think they bring huge strength to it. But
yeah, I don't think it's weak. I don't think it's weak, but it's definitely not physically the tallest line, on, you know, in the intercounty game.
Nah, that's I say, mightn't be the tallest, but they bring huge amounts of strength, and I don't think they'll be found out too much in any other way. But come here, I'd say that's the challenge for us. Definitely, we have to look at it, and we have to look whether we can exploit that there area, whether we can exploit other areas of the scoring zone. And you know, I can tell you that we've worked hard on it now over the last year, trying to do, and it's something we're going to try and bring into the game on Saturday. And you know, at this stage of the game now, and the stage of the week, it's all about getting out and getting it done and doing it, you know. And I suppose that's going to be the challenge for both teams now on Saturday, you know.
Yeah, well, listen, Michael, best of luck with it. Thanks for taking the call.
Good man, Colin. Thanks, Michael.
Michael's not giving too much away there, lads, about where he's going to be playing. But to be fair, Barry, and I saw you writing about it this week, or quotes from you this week in all the papers. You're everywhere these days.
Yeah.
But you're saying that he will play in there, and you wouldn't be surprised if someone like
Twin Towers approach,
like Gallagher could go in there. Is he fit?
I don't know. There's reports that he may not be fit, but yeah, someone of that sort of ilk, you know, who's 6'3", 6'4", that could cause a bit of bother, because we have seen that a bit with Dublin, the fact that Roy O'Carroll's not available. But I think any full back line would struggle against a two-man full forward line of 6'4", 6'5". If you kick 10 balls into them, the full back isn't going to win all 10, you know. So if you win a ball like that close to goal, you're either setting up a point chance or you have a goal chance yourself. So, and I think, you know, as most people believe, Donegal will need, you know, a goal or two to win on Saturday.
Yeah, definitely will. And nobody's talking about this. Like, I mean, Cooper, McMahon and Byrne, like, they're not big men.
No.
Now, I know Philly McMahon can spoil you all day long and he can break it down to Keane O'Sullivan, and that's fair enough. But like you said, if you put two in there, you know, Davy and Johnny Cooper will have their hands full with a big man, and Keane can't sweep. If you separate the two men, you know, Keane can't sweep really well in front of both of them. So it would make perfect sense, and Donegal will have to do something different.
Well, Kerry tried it in the final, didn't he? And it didn't work. Like, it got really annoying. Like, they just had aimless long balls on top of Donaghy.
Donaghy only came on, though.
Like, you know, it was just after a while, it was like, that's when Dublin sort of opened up the whole lead then. It was
two things on that. Number one, Rory O'Carroll was there. And number two, Donaghy was in there on his own and he was just being spoiled and knocked down.
Isolated.
Here we'll have a situation where Rory O'Carroll won't be there and we're talking about sticking in two fellas. You know what I mean? So you're throwing diagonal balls from both sides at big men who are knocking it down. You know, and Keane's going to struggle to cover both.
And thing as well, there's probably two wins attached to it, because if they do go that route, Keane O'Sullivan has to head back towards his penalty spot and try and pick up breaks or cover his men. But also it takes him out of the centre position, which means that Donegal, who were brilliant at, you know, overlapping, running, getting guys around the middle third, like Frank McGlynn, Anthony Thompson, etc., Keane O'Sullivan is then not in that centre-back position. So, you know, there's two good wins for them there if they do go that route.
Are you getting nervous, Barry?
No, not at all. I still be confident in Dublin would do it, but you know, throughout 2016, this is the most vulnerable Dublin can be. You know, they've cruised through Leinster, no back door. If they get over quarter final, they're always better then for the semi final, and into September they're better again. So you know, the fact that it is Donegal is good because it's a good test. But the last 2 years they played Fermanagh and Monaghan, and they won both games very comfortably. So it's just a totally different dynamic for them now.
Tactically, I think that's a very good point about Keane O'Sullivan having been sucked out of the middle. But to be fair to Keane O'Sullivan, and I've done analysis on this before, he's constantly talking to McCarthy, John Small, Jack McCaffrey, whoever's there with him, that when he drops, you're falling back into my position. You know, so there's massive communication going on there. And he is very smart about when he goes and whether James is
he's
free.
Selective.
He's selective. Now, will James be put in on Michael Murphy in the full back line, which could happen?
Like, that's if he's fit.
That's if he, but the talk is he is, but you're smiling there.
I don't know. I just think.
What do you know?
No, it's just that when the injury happened the week before the Leinster final, you know, initially I thought it was a cruciate, got the scan and it showed it was a medial ligament. And I've had medial ligaments myself. And, you know, it is a difficult injury to get back from, you know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. I think it might be slightly too short for me. You know, they probably would have had an all-out 70-minute A versus B training game last weekend. Did he play in that game? I don't know. And then the other thing is, if you risk him on Saturday, you know, you could end up doing damage for the semi-final and final. Like, they might win on Saturday without him. So it'll be interesting to see. But yeah, you're losing a couple of things with James McCarthy
if he doesn't play.
Yeah, because that athleticism going forward, you know, the stride he has, he just powers through, can bypass three or four people very quickly, and he uses the ball very cleverly when he gets into the opposition half. And then the other option then is you can drop him back in front of Stephen Cluxton for, you know, 10 or 15 minute periods if need to be.
And they won't be able to play Kieran Kilkenny half back against Donegal. I mean, you can forget about that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to bring that up, what they're actually going to do there, because Martin O'Reilly is playing in the half back line for Donegal now. That's where he played against Cork. He marked Mark Collins.
Yeah.
And Ryan McHugh is in the half-forward line. So, you know, if Martin O'Reilly is at centre-half-back, you know what I mean? That's a huge weakness for Donegal, as far as I'm concerned. He's following his man. He's not sure how to play there. He's leaving the middle wide open. And Cork could have ran amok in the first half, I thought, against Donegal.
Yeah, when they got that five-point lead, especially, yeah.
Yeah, well, that Twin Towers theory that you're talking about, Barry, it's risky on two counts, because if they don't score enough from it, then if Dublin turn the ball over, even if it's only 13 metres out, they usually score from a turnover, like they just overrun you and score. The other thing is that if you're worried about that centre halfback spot, that's usually where Gallagher and Murphy would plant themselves, and no one gets through. Like, and it sort of makes that defence so solid because those two are there, sort of guarding the gates, nearly.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, the big question here is how Donegal are going to line up against Dublin. Dublin are not getting beaten by the really defensive teams. Mm. So what do Donegal do? Are they going to do what Westmead did, which didn't work? Are they going to do, you know, what they've done in the league and didn't work? Mm. Or are they going to do something different? And that's kind of why, like, I would agree with the Twin Towers, because Dublin haven't dealt with it yet. Mm. So at least you're asking new questions of them.
Yeah.
You continually ask Dublin the same questions.
And they have all the answers.
Yeah, they have all the answers. And now they have this option, like you're mentioning, with Kilkenny going the halfback line, if that is necessary throughout the game. Who's to say they won't? Because if Anthony Thompson is playing wing forward and he's going back into the half back line, which he does, and McGlynn sweeps, then why not play Kilkenny on Thompson? Because Thompson's not a scoring threat. Mm. And like, let him follow him on back. You know, that kind of way.
I just think you need your six defenders set up against Donegal. So Dublin can be as adventurous as they like, but they still need to have that shape. Like, they can't just have Kilkenny running around in a free role in the
forward.
I think
they're happy enough to leave Keane O'Sullivan minding the house. Once he's covering the full back line and holding his position, you know, their two wing backs kind of have free roles, really.
Yeah, they do a bit. But like, the thing with Rory Gallagher is he's going to do something different. He definitely will.
It's because what that is.
When he sat down before Christmas planning out the whole year ahead, he'll have known, I'm going to have to beat Dublin at some stage to win an All-Ireland or get to an All-Ireland final. And they had an opportunity in the league to play them once. I don't think they showed anything really in that game, and then they played in the semi-final and they had no interest at all in that semi-final against Dublin. Like, they didn't put any time or effort or emphasis upon it, so he hasn't shown Dublin anything this year. Probably you know, in the back of the mind that we'd end up playing them in the championship at some stage later in the year, and he has to have been working on training, and obviously, you know, you can't just beat Cork on a Saturday afternoon and say we've Dublin next week, let's start planning for it.
Yeah,
you know, you do need a couple of things that you've been working on for the last maybe 3 or 4 months on and off. A plan C or a plan D that you'd be comfortable enough to try and implement then on the big day. So
yeah, it's interesting as well. And you talk about the league match with Donegal Dublin. It's terrible for the league that you might throw a bogey team out in the, you know what I mean? It's just the league is just treated with. I would hope Donegal went out and tried to win that game, that they weren't playing this rope a dope, but we never know. Kickouts are going to be huge at the weekend, lads, and the Donegal have a huge decision to make in whether they push up on the kickouts or whether they don't. Obviously, 2014, they pushed up on the kickouts. But I was reading Jim McGuinness's piece. They only won 3 of their 20 kickouts.
Dublin's kickout.
So all that effort and getting out of position so much, is it worth it? Because Cluxton's so
and
bloody,
the energy.
And the energy of getting up and coming back. And Cluxton's so bloody good, you're probably not going to win them anyways, or you have to have a brilliant plan in place. So is it worth it to push up on the kickouts?
It's nearly insulting. The Cluxton, they think that you can just push up and that'll solve it, like, because he doesn't need a free man. He'll force players into positions where he can see the space. He doesn't need 70 yards of grass. He doesn't need a man standing beside him. He's the best kicker in the country for
he's
a reason.
He's like a quarterback. He just needs a little pocket of space and a couple of dummy runs, and that'll free up a player heading out towards the sideline to collect it on his chest, you know.
Yeah, and another thing as well, Donegal pushing up in the kickouts, if Cluxton does go long, Donegal aren't blessed in the middle of the field with fetchers. Like, I mean,
if Gallagher's not there,
like, I mean, Fenton could run amok. So, I'd nearly be saying, if it was Rory Gallagher, it's nearly worth our while to concede the kick out and meet them in midfield. Maybe not camp
just
that
retreat,
far back, but just meet them a little bit close. You know what I mean? Mm. Set your stall up maybe from midfield back rather than going completely defensive, because you're not going to win them. You're having your fellas run the whole way up and then running all the way back, and they're, by the last 10 minutes, like Kerry, who tried to do this, they're gassed.
I think they'll probably end up just allowing Stephen to clip the ball 20 yards out to Johnny Cooper as much as he likes. Like Rory Kavanagh and Orr McNeilish, they're not your traditional high fielders.
No.
You know, not at all. Even probably Michael Darren McCauley would be more recognised for high fielding than those two. And obviously Brian Fenton would be the main man there. So, if Brian Fenton catches a kick out, you know, he's only 50, 60 yards from your goal then. So you're in big trouble. So I think they will retreat and sort of, you know, play maybe a 12-1-1 system or something like that when Stephen has the ball for a kick out, and you know, try and meet them maybe between the halfway line and Dublin 65, that type of area, I'd say.
Yeah, that seems to be. What do you think, Colin?
I think that's what I would do anyway, if I was in charge of Donegal, which I never will be, but it was just set up. get ready for them.
Yeah, get ready for them. And I hate to encourage a team to concede kickers.
I was going to say, you'll complain about it on Monday then. When
but
they
it
do
just
do.
Feels like it's the right thing to do on this occasion because, you know, they're so weak. And with Dublin, with the Donegal kick out, you'd imagine Dublin will push up.
Yeah.
But the difference between Dublin now and the Dublin team in 2014, they'll push everybody except for Keane up. Mm. They're not going to leave the middle open like they did. Yeah. And they'll be trying to zonally, you know, because Thompson's not the best kick out, short kick out man in the world. So there'll be five forwards against six defenders, basically. And you'll be trying to suck Thompson into a silly one, you know what I mean? Yeah. And put pressure on then. Because Dublin won't go gung-ho like they did in 2014 and push everybody up and leave the defence wide.
Because they are completely sucked into it by Donegal. Donegal had managed to create that sort of 40-yard space between, I think it was Rory O'Carroll and Mick Fitzsimons and the half-back line. So Dublin played completely into Donegal's hands that day. Obviously, they've learnt from it 2 years later, and they won't allow that to happen, and particularly with Keane O'Sullivan's role. So Dublin will push up, and they're quite good at it. You know, you see a lot of the forwards after they take a shot, whether it goes wide or over the bar straight away, they're getting back into the position, they're shouting at teammates, pointing different directions. So they are very good at pushing up on kickouts, which they could get a bit of joy out of it.
What do Donegal do from their kickers? Because I actually like Barry's idea of putting the two lads inside. So what do they do? Who do they go to get 70, 80, 90% of their kicks?
Well, Murphy, I suppose that's the thing. I'm not sure if Donegal will want to go long. Like, they're not strong in midfield, you know what I mean? But, like, I mean, Murphy's not the best fetcher in the world anyway. And we're actually giving him Gallagher in the full forward line when Gallagher, we're not even sure if he's fit. But someone will be there. But Donegal are just going to have to go. Like, they're going to have to try and find that one fella that's free. You know what I mean? Mm. That's what they're going to have to do. And against Cork, they went long with six of their 30 kickouts. So they've learned their lesson. They don't want to go long. They're not strong enough in midfield. So Dublin can get a bit of... There's no doubt Dublin can get a bit of joy out of the Donegal kickout. Another thing about Donegal, lads, is that against Cork, while they were wide open in the first half, especially this Martin O'Reilly thing at centre-back is crazy. Lacey was at wing-back. I don't understand it. But the thing about it, when they needed to shut the game down, Cork only scored 1 point in the last 20 minutes. Like, they went back to the Donegal defensive system and they camped in their 45 and they completely shook Cork down. Cork were gassed at that stage and they just couldn't get through them. Now, you know, Donegal probably shouldn't go into this game with, oh, let's attack Dublin, let's defend. I don't think you can defend the whole time against Dublin, or I don't think you can attack the whole time against Dublin. I think they should go for it in the first half while they have their legs and while they have their energy. They have to just go for it. And in the second half, if they want... take a rest and go ultra defensive inside your own 45. You know what I mean? There has to be some sort of a balance struck between, like, it can't be all out attack or all out defence because neither of them seem to work.
Yeah, like, in fairness, they were very good in the second half the last day, and sort of it reminded me a bit of their quarter final win against Armagh 2 years ago, leading into that Dublin game, because they were the second best team for large parts of it. But then when they needed to shut up shop and get a couple of scores, they were very well tuned in to do so. But yeah, in the first half, you would have been concerned with them because there was so much space back there.
So much space. You look at
between the half back line and full back line, it was huge gaps. Yeah,
which is so unlike them because McGlynn was dropping off his man and Thompson was going onto his man. But it wasn't able to happen until Thompson got back. Yeah. So McGlynn was dropping off late. So Cork had a huge amount of room. And you look at their defenders. You look at Eamon McGee. You look at Lacey. Even McBrearty. They don't have the pace for these one-on-one situations. Mm.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Donegal have obviously, you know, defended for years in numbers, and that safety in numbers scenario has helped a lot of the players, because if you do go forward at pace and then you drop back, you actually have that 5 second breather to recover and go again. Whereas for a lot of players, when you run back, your wing forward is then tearing off again, you know, trying to make the most of the fact that you're out of breath. Whereas for Donegal, they've never had that fact. So I don't know if it was getting back to Croke Park or whatever, the dimensions of it was just maybe slightly, took them a while to get a handle of it. But, if you know, from looking at it from the Hogan stand, you could just see so many gaps in their defence. And if Cork had maybe Colm O'Neill or Paddy Kelly on in the first half, they could have easily, you know, got a 7 or 8 point lead, and Donegal wouldn't have came back from that.
Yeah, just quickly while I have you here, because we're going to move on from this, we have another huge game to analyse. The Cluxton kickouts, like, I look at Cluxton and I'm looking for signals and I'm looking for different things, and I was told once before that not a huge amount of work goes into these kickouts, that he's just so brilliant at them.
Yeah.
All he needs in front of him is movement.
And it's so his call.
And it's his call who to go to. Is that the way Dublin
goes? Yeah, it would have been Gary Matthews, our goalkeeping coach, that probably introduced it around 2010. And yeah, there was no real, you know, set time or drills for our conversations about, you know, tapping your foot or tapping your leg or ball under your arm
or wipe your chest.
Yeah, or a different coloured cone or whatever to put the ball on. So it was really a case that, you know, we had this sort of 3 second rule that the ball went dead. Stephen would have got the ball and be on the tee within 3 seconds and gone. But it was a case that he called the shots, yeah. And everyone just sort of scattered in different areas to try and create the gaps. Ideally, you know, he still ideally wants to win the ball as far off the pitch as possible. He doesn't want to have to go 15 yards every time. You know, he'd rather go 50 yards out to the wing if he can, but it's totally down to his call, yeah.
I was playing a reserve game one day and the code was, if it was between 0 and 100, it was on the left-hand side. If it was between 100 and 200, it was down the middle, and 200 and 300 on the right. And I had to shout it, so I was the one shouting 257, and people had a reaction.
You lost me already.
Unbelievable! Yeah. Like, and everyone, like all the opposition players, were goading me for it. Then, like, and just shouting out these random numbers. It was our reserve kickout strategy.
But I'm not sure that even works. Like, I mean, the opposition's going to be ready for whichever side of the field, anyways. Like, yeah. I mean, the brilliant thing about the Dublin kickouts is that there's no calls needed. Because surely you work on movement out the field and you're blocking and things
exactly,
like that.
Exactly, yeah. You know, centre back gets out of the way so a wing back can run across. Yeah. Or the two wing backs completely swap, that type of thing. Yeah, there's plenty of that. And even, you know, you would have seen.
So you should have been worried about blocks, Conan, and not worried about shouting 350.
Or even targeting, you know, Paul Flynn and Dermot Connolly, you know, create a bit of space for them because they're well able to win any sort of ball that would be kicked 60, 70 yards to them. So, yeah, there'd be plenty of movement and coordination out the pitch, but it was Stephen's show at the end of the day.
Yeah, fair enough. Not a bad man to leave it in his control. All right, up next, we'll discuss Mayo and Tyrone. Mayo are 13-8 for this game. Now, as John Giles always says, you can only base your prediction on what you've seen so far this year. And if you're basing it on that, Mayo are not playing brilliantly. They're playing in fits and starts. But if you're basing your decision on the quality of their players, their ability to beat the top teams in Croke Park, their record over the last 5 years, you'd say, here, where is this bet? Where is these odds coming
from? It could
be
50-50.
I think the odds here should be 50-50.
No, I think Tyrone are favourites and are rightly so.
Really?
The only thing is, you know, obviously Donegal could have beaten them the last day. So if that was the case, you'd be saying Donegal in an All-Ireland final and not huge, you know, underdogs against Dublin. And then Tyrone, you know, Mayo would be a different dynamic then.
Yeah, because I mentioned even to Michael Murphy earlier on, I was saying that Donegal were the better team in that Ulster final for so long. Suddenly Tyrone crank it up in the last 10 minutes and get a great win, and suddenly they're all Ireland contenders and Donegal are an ageing team.
Yeah.
Like, it's so, you know, and before that game was a cat and mouse game in the Ulster final. The Tyrone get 100% credit for the way they won it. But Tyrone had beaten nobody until that game. That game nearly needs to be taken into in isolation because it was so defensive. I still need to see more from Tyrone before I'm going to back them, you know, to be beating a team like Mayo, who are a top, top level team.
But they've been impressive. Like, they can only beat who's in front of them.
They weren't impressive for a lot of the game against Donegal.
Yeah, but like, they still won an Ulster final by 2 points. They didn't concede any goals. It was just I know they had to get that late rally to come through in the end, but they had it in them. And against Cavan, especially the second game, and against Derry, they were unbelievable. And the whole way throughout the league, they've been brilliant. Next year, they have, and everyone knows how they have the setup. They've got the players. Everything sort of suits every one of their individuals. Like, it is impressive watching them. And I know they haven't maybe, well, we're talking about Donegal maybe beating Dublin here. Well, yeah, I know Barry's not.
But, you know, we're talking about how they could potentially beat them.
But like, they have sort of, like, everyone can see that they're a good team, so I don't think it matters. Like, and they're playing well. If Mayo had came through these other tests a bit better, then we would be rating Mayo a bit highly. But
I think, yeah, maybe the fact that Mayo aren't going as well as they were the previous 4 years, that we're basing a lot of it on that.
I'll make the case for Mayo. Against Westmeath, who camped under 45 to score 210.5, Dublin don't do that against Westmeath. Now, I'd make the argument that game was over, 12 points up, you mentally switch off, fair enough. Against Kildare, they won the game when they had to win it. They were outstanding again in the first half. Blew Kildare out of the water.
Job done.
That's job done. Mm. And I've been involved in so many games where the job's done. Barry, you have playing with Dublin. When you switch off for that second, it's hard to switch that back on again.
You can't.
It's gone. So they're almost clinging on.
Yeah.
And I make
you're thinking about the night out.
Well, I won't even go into what's going on through my mind. If I'm playing well. But the thing about this is, Mayo have hammered Galway for so many years. Were Mayo up for that game? Mayo have played Fermanagh. Were they up for that? They played Kildare. Were they up for it? They played Westmeath. Now, I'd say they are up for it, but they will be nowhere near up for those games like they will against Tyrone. Being after what they've done in the last 5 years, being underdogs against Tyrone, who've been nowhere the last 5 years and have won an Ulster Championship. If I was from Mayo, I would be raring to go.
You can't just come on their quarter final against Tyrone though and decide I'm going to turn it on now. Whereas Tyrone have switched off.
That's fair enough, yeah.
Tyrone were, 8 points up against Derry, and they absolutely hung them up. Like, they just kept going. The same with Cavan. He scored 5 goals against Cavan just because they wanted to put them to the sword.
They also drew with Cavan.
They did, but, a couple of high balls undone. That wasn't the case of them switching off or thinking they're not up for it. Like, when they've had a sniff of blood, they've absolutely gone for it. Like, and they are animalistic, and this is what's happening. This is what happened in the Ulster final when they went the whole way to the 75th minute. They beat Donegal.
Yeah.
Yeah, and look, I think there is a bit of value in the fact that Tyrone are coming into the game as Ulster champions as well. I think it might give them a few extra percent. For 90% of that squad, you know, they didn't have an Ulster medal under their belt. They didn't have an Ulster title in 6 years. So I think they will get a bit of energy and oxygen from that as well. But look, when you look at the Mayo team, you still see a lot of very, very good players. You know, some of the best players in the country. If you're analysing them in terms of their performances over the last 3 months, like, are there many of them really that you're saying above sort of 6 out of 10, 7 out of 10? But that's not to say they can't still do it. But the other thing is, maybe it's just a bit of confusion around the system and the sweeper and all that.
McLaughlin can't play.
Yeah, it just doesn't lead to you being confident about them going in against on Saturday. And like Mickey Hart and the Tyrone lads, they're so well drilled. I remember chatting to Kyle McCarron a few months ago and saying, you know, Tyrone are going well and building on last year's semi-final, etc. And he says, we can't wait to get all the 21s in and get training properly from like March to June, July, where we're out 4 times a week and getting everyone drilled in and everyone tuned into the system and the way of playing. And so they're only going to go from strength to strength once I got everyone together and training and got a full run of sort of games under their belt. So I think that will stand to them, you know. And you know, with Mickey Hart, there's so much certainty around and confidence that he can do. With Stephen Rochford, I don't think that's there at the moment.
Maybe not. Yeah. And the one thing Tyrone live off is turnovers. I was looking at a stat, did 14 turnovers in the Ulster final against Donegal. Like, that's incredible, like in an Ulster final. And you know that
their possession was so key. And there was so much emphasis put on it. Yeah.
Against Donegal as well.
Yeah. Against Donegal, who were so good through the hand and who are so used to playing against that system that they generally try not to go into contact. So 14 is absolutely incredible, and they live off those turnovers, they live off the hitting on the break, and we know all that. But I just think Mayo, you know, they have players, they've played these systems so many times. They played Donegal, for example, last year in the quarterfinal, and they beat them well. Like, they've played these defensive systems. Mayo, or Westmeath, they've beaten Donegal twice. They beat Tyrone 2 years ago. Now, I know it was more of an ageing Tyrone team. I just think Mayo have the experience of playing these teams that they'll be patient and they won't cough up those type of turnovers. What Mayo are really good at is giving nice diagonal passes in, you know, to the full forward line, and Andy Moran's such a good target man. I think they're going to give Tyrone a whole new set of problems that Tyrone haven't seen before.
But can you see Tyrone scoring a goal against Mayo? I'm sure the answer is yes.
Up, it's funny this year, actually. Tyrone, up the last few years, Tyrone have been struggling to score goals big time. Like, they scored them against Derry and against Cavan, who were second-tier teams in my eyes. You know, they didn't score them against Donegal. I'm not sure if I'd say Tyrone will score, because, like, that counter-attack system is kind of built around scoring points, I would have thought.
Well, even with Mayo, how open they are, like, you know, how sort of disjointed they look a bit, because they're going forward and committing so many men.
Boyle will hold his position and McLaughlin will be beside him. Now, I'd worry about the form of Lee Keegan. I'd worry about Aidan O'Shea not knowing where to play. I'd worry about
Aidan just looks a bit lost or something at the moment. I mean, because I know he got the goal at the very end of the game, but Mayo, I think, has scored 2:15 at that stage and he hadn't scored at all. Which is crazy to think, you know, of someone of his quality. And like, it's a huge game for Aidan O'Shea, I think, on Saturday, because over the last couple of years, you know, in a few of the bigger games, he has been negated in it. You look at the two semi-finals against Dublin last year, he only got a point from play in total over 140 minutes. Then a couple of the All-Ireland finals as well, the Donegal won 2012, and then the 2013 one when he was midfield against Dublin, you know, Stephen Cluxon and Keane O'Sullivan ran him with the kickouts, yeah, etc. So, you know, it is a big game for him, and you know, he's not playing well, a bit of heat on him obviously for a few reasons, but you know, if Mayo are to win on Saturday, they need him to probably score 1-3, 1-4.
Yeah, he won't be in a full forward, will he? It's like I was saying to Michael Murphy, playing full forward against Tyrone with Kavanagh and Justin McMahon covering you, it's not a great place to be.
And Ronan McNabb hanging off you as
McNabb
well.
McNabb hanging off you, yeah.
That's where I would play him.
Really?
Like, I know it sounds stupid against Tyrone as well, and he will see less of the ball, but I just don't think you can go through an hour game with him scoring once. Like, they need Aidan O'Shea, like, to be the front and centre of their threat.
Yeah.
Like,
you know, he scored a goal against Donegal last year, but that was with Mark McHugh sweeping and hanging off him.
That was a great goal.
It was a great goal, but Colm Cavan and Justin McMahon won't be brushed aside.
No,
Mark McHugh,
he swatted him away.
And size isn't his strength. And I think Mark McHugh's a brilliant sweeper, but I mean, Aidan O'Shea against that kind of a sweeper can get joy, but against those two fellas, like,
it was like Dublin last year. He was probably sandwiched in between Rory O'Carroll and Philly McMahon,
they're too physically strong to be worried about that.
I think he wants a lot of ball across the ground as well, though, that he maybe doesn't get enough credit for, because he's such a big man. Like, he does, I think people maybe get preoccupied with his aerial threat and they forget that he can actually go out and win the ball, and then when he only needs a half an inch to score, that's where I play him, because they've got enough good players to get the ball back up the field. They don't need him defensively.
Yeah, I think they need him from kickouts. I think they need him in midfield. I think they need him grafting. You know, I think they need him out in that engine room, especially against Tyrone. He's a brilliant tackler. Yeah. He's brilliant at all those things. And I think they need him out there. I think having him in there on three possessions in a half, like, I don't care
Need him making an impact. Now, ideally at full forward, you know, catching five balls in the first half. But if he's not doing that, then you need to get him out in the thick of things, probably similar to maybe Michael Murphy. But I suppose Dermot O'Connor coming back this weekend would be huge. You know, the dead leg he had last weekend will probably have done good, you know, the couple of weeks off, and he'll be raring to go.
The only way I'm looking at it is that I was saying that I think Tyrone will score a goal, and I think the only way Mayo can win is scoring goals, which is very tough against Tyrone. So I think their best way of doing that is with Aidan O'Shea in full forward. Like, they might not see a lot of ball, but I think that's their best chance of scoring a goal and thus winning the game.
We'll agree to disagree on this one before we move on. Two other things I want to cover before we finish, lads, is Kevin McLaughlin, a sweeper. Now, I don't want to talk to him about whether he's a good sweeper or not, because I think we're all in agreement that he's not. But another thing that needs to be mentioned, if Mayo are bringing him back as a sweeper, they're immediately freeing up Justin McMahon to be the sweeper without Tyrone altering their shape in any way, you know, which is a really stupid thing to do against Tyrone. You're giving them that, they want him to be covering. Why not make them bring back Sludden to be the sweep? You know what I mean? Mess up their shape, because you play a sweeper against Tyrone and you're giving them the free sweepers and just allowing them to have that man there without Mickey Hart going, right, okay, well, Justin McMahon's having to cover somebody. Right, we're going to have to bring back Sludden.
Make him think.
Yeah, we needed Sludden on the break, you know. You know, it's a silly thing to do to give Tyrone what they really want.
Yeah, basically they don't have to make any adjustments at all, really. And I think when you get to the bigger games, the latter stages during the knockout, you need to add some level of unpredictability about it, you know, just to throw it out there, and you would have worked on it for the last few months, just to see if you can ask the opposition a few questions like that, and you're just playing completely into their hands. And, you know, for Justin McMahon back there, similar to Keane O'Sullivan that we spoke about earlier, you know, he's so comfortable in that role, and it'd be very difficult for Mayo to get any joy if they're just allowing him back there.
Yeah, it's true, isn't it, that you know, I think we're talking about Donegal, and I think we're all in agreement Donegal are going to throw a rabbit out of a hat this weekend. Don't get the impression Mayo are going to do that, don't you not? They just seem to have stuck to the same thing all year.
And then that, though, Jason Doherty had such a good game the last day. Like, if Jamie O'Connor comes back, they might just stick with that. You know, maybe...
No, definitely have to start Dermot O'Connor.
Don't be sure.
I'm saying Dermot O'Connor does start and maybe McLaughlin doesn't.
Jason
Doherty plays. Dermot O'Connor plays. He's the best player I've ever seen. He definitely plays. Maybe they might just play the half forwards then, and those guys can get back and cover anyway.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily need McLaughlin.
Maybe they'll just play with no sweeper and go man up like they did in the last few years. And, you know,
God, I'd love to see that.
Well, it'd be great, yeah.
If Mayo did that,
I think they'd have a good chance.
Great chance. Yeah,
but Tyrone would love that too. Like, that doesn't stop Tyrone bringing their men back still, even if Mayo put everyone forward. I mean, that's even better. There's just like 25 people then instead of 45. It's harder to score.
Yeah, but Mayo, like, I mean, Mayo, it's not like Mayo aren't going to be turning Tyrone over as well. You know what I mean? Like, when Tyrone attack in numbers, if Mayo turn that over, Mayo have it. Like, Mayo can hit Tyrone on the counter too. And if they have man on man up there, it's much easier than having a sweeper. You know, Tyrone are not don't have the trademark on, you know, on counter attacks.
Yeah.
Another thing quickly is whether Donald Vaughan, who was brilliant at the weekend, he seems to be tailor made for Colm Kavanagh, because Donald Vaughan can score. And Will Donald Vaughan, he loves to score. He's actually, to a fault, actually go back and do a bit of defending, Donald. But he loves that. Will he give Kavanagh, which we've talked about before, something to think about, that when Kavanagh drops off and goes back, will Donald Vaughan sneakily hang around the half forward line and say, here, look at me, I'm the, you know, I'm the outball. And he seems like the perfect man to do that.
Yeah, he's this habit of just sneaking into these really good positions, you know, out of nowhere. And it might be only like a 20-yard burst. Maybe it's the timing of the run or something, or just the way the play is developing. He has this good instinct to get in behind the right person at the right time, and Mayo are very good at finding him. So he could cause problems, but I'm sure Colm Kavanagh will, Mickey Willis mentioned that this week, obviously, and spoke to him about it. But he will keep a bit of watching. But just to go back on the previous point briefly, like, Mayo playing with a sweeper, you know, lining up maybe similar enough to Tyrone, they're not as good as Tyrone at doing that.
Yeah.
So why do it? You know, maybe you should just do the opposite. Tyrone are very good at it. They're very comfortable. It's how they play a lot up in Ulster and throughout the league, all that type of stuff, with five Ulster teams in Division 2. I think Mayo would be a better chance if they go back to this sort of, you know, middle third, kamikaze tackling and effort and turnovers. And, you know, as we mentioned, you know, they've gone very, very close for the last 4 years with that style of play, pushing up.
Yeah, and the thing about this is, before we go on, because I don't want to go too far over time, because it is the GAA hour and we're consistently an hour and 20 minutes. But, like, Tyrone will give you that sweeper. They'll drop so many men back. Just leave Colin Boyle there. You don't need Kevin McLaughlin there beside him. Or leave, tell Durkin to hold his position. Yeah. Oh, no, he's good going forward. But let Seamus O'Shea drop back, because Toronto dropped so many men back. McLaughlin doesn't need to be this. You don't, it doesn't need to be there. Like, just let two lads hold the half back line and one of them not be McLaughlin. And you know what I mean? You should be in decent shape.
It's such an exciting weekend, though, isn't it?
It is. Well, even the excitement of analysing it. There's so much to talk about, and there's so much excitement.
Shorts a week.
To give it, just fair play to you, Tipperary Duffy, for giving us a little bit more of this. No fault
the
with that whatsoever.
Structure's great.
What a brilliant structure. Right, lads, up next we'll get predictions. Quickly. Okay, lads, first up, Tyrone are 4-6, Mayo 13-8. I think you all know what way I'm going, because I think Mayo are way, way, way overpriced on that. A huge hitter, a big, big game. They're not playing well. The motivation, like Dara O'Shea said in the Times, Mayo players will be thinking, what the hell have they done compared to us? You know, why are they being made favourites? Like, it's a kick to their egos to have gone from the level they're at to, like, you know, new kids on the block, Tyrone, are going to, you know, are going to be favourites. I think for that reason, I'm going to go for Mayo for a win at 13-8. Tyrone are 4-6, by the way.
I'm going to go with Tyrone by 2 or 3 points. I just think coming through out of Ulster will give them a lot of confidence. I think they've, you know, very well drilled, great manager there. And De La Voy is on September, and I think they'll see Saturday. It's a very tough game, but a good stepping stone and a good game to get under their belts.
Yep, I'm with Barry. You get Tyrone -2 for 5-4, I think. So there's decent odds.
5-4, yeah. Jeez, you're a brave. Like, okay, well, I'm going for Mayo, so I see no value in that at all. But, like, I mean, they have to win by 3, 5-4. Difficult to know. I just don't see how Tyrone are going to beat Mayo by 3 points. I just can't comprehend it. But
score
anyways,
goals, don't concede goals.
Yeah, well, look, we'll see. The other game is, lads, Dublin are 1-6, Donegal are 11-2. So I've brought in the spread here. Conan, disrespectfully to Mayo, brought in the spread for Tyrone, which I just didn't want to do. But listen, if Mayo players are listening to this podcast, listen, that's all the motivation. That will be hung up in the dressing room, no doubt. Dublin -5 or 10-11. So they're not even money at -5, and Donegal +5 are evens. I would go Donegal -5 at 10-11 if I was going, or Dublin -5 at 10-11. I think Dublin will end up winning. They'll end up winning well. Donegal defence isn't as tight as what it should be. And, like, I mean, Dublin are just a machine, and that's for those reasons, I'll go Dublin on the spread.
Yeah, I think it was actually -4 earlier in the week, and it's obviously been pushed out to -5 now. But yeah, I think obviously the big thing when you're playing Donegal is if you get a lead in the first half, it makes life so much more difficult for you compared to if, you know, you're chasing a 2 or 3 point deficit. So if Dublin can start reasonably well, get into half time in around level or a couple of points ahead, you'd fancy them to get over that 5 point margin.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I've been Dublin's biggest supporter outside of Dublin for the last few years. But I would love to see Donegal beat them.
I think we'd all. Well, I'd love to see.
We're all in agreement.
I'd love to see Donegal beat Dublin. Like, let's be honest, you're trying to be objective about it. But as a fan, you want the champions to be beaten. Yeah. You don't want to see a domination, and that's what we're afraid might happen with Dublin. So that's the reason I'd like Donegal to win. But go on.
So Donegal +5. Yeah, I think Dublin will win, and I would go with -5 as well.
-5 So it's a full house of Dublin, -5. It's hard to look anywhere else. Right, lads, that's all we have time for this week. Thanks to Conan, Mikey, Dion and Evan for putting the show together. Thanks to Barry for dropping in. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at sportsjoe_GEA and subscribe to the GEA Hour on iTunes. We're top of the charts 3 weeks running. I'll stop bragging about that soon the minute we go off the top. All right, we'll see you on Monday with a great weekend to review. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.